On Sunday, April 21st, John T. Reddick will be the keynote speaker for the Preservation Bath Lecture and Awards. That's going to be in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Hot Springs, Virginia. His talk is titled, The Pools and Their African American Legacy. I'm joined on air right now by John T. Reddick. John, how are you doing today?
Oh, very good. It's a beautiful day here in New York.
Thank you so very much for joining us on the show. John is an architect. You grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You were educated at Yale, and you're living in New York. How does Bath County tie into all this?
My father grew up in Bath County, and his first cousin, who he grew up with like a sister, was Estelle Tonsler Bowler. She got married again later in her life. But she was an attendant at the Warm Springs Pool, and so we would come down every summer when we were younger and spend our time there. So I actually learned to swim in the pools. I can remember the vibrant African-American community at the time. So I have a really like childhood idealized sort of relationship and appreciation for Bath County.
You were coming of age in the 60s. In 1965, I think I read that was when maybe you really developed a real interest in architecture because of a family trip.
Well, the family trip and even the pools, because, I mean, they weren't the norm. And so for me, to see these physical things that were different, and so I was always curious, like, how things were put together. I was just fascinated. They had the chair you could lower for people who were handicapped, and all these different things that were just like, well, what is this for? And my aunt would kind of explain it. And then even during segregation, we could go swimming when the pool closed. So we would have friends like Bobby Merchant and some of the other young people in the neighborhood. And the pools were just like our own. So even the segregated aspect didn't connect to us, except for maybe the movie theater that was sort of divided, black, white. We were hanging out with the people we liked and doing the things we wanted to do. So for me, my aunt kind of kept us distant from the real rules of segregation. So that didn't even have a highly visible part of it for me till like later, appreciating that that's what was going on. But for the most part, it was idyllic.
Let me ask you this: with your career choice, architecture, and I would say vocation, maybe a life calling. Mm-hmm. When you really developed that interest, how did you pursue that education on your own before you got to college, before you went to Yale?
Well, I would tell any young person or parent trying to raise a young person, I had curiosity. And I don't know, without curiosity, I don't know how people find, their path. But with me, my parents, who never going to college, my mom or dad, but any interest I had, they encouraged it. They never sort of said, based on race, you can't do this or that. And I could draw very well. My mom actually had a very good skill at drawing. And so it was something that was sort of talked about and facilitated. And I went to a vocational high school to be like for architectural graphic drawing. And I got to be like an office boy in my senior year of high school. And once I worked in the office, I started to know the realities of how to go forward in that profession. So I went to Ohio State as an undergraduate, and then to Yale. But again, it was like sort of building on my natural interest. And so no matter what your kid's interest is, if they have that interest, you should encourage it. Even if they don't stick with it, they start to understand they were not so good, then they got better, then they got excellent. And then they realize they can do that to anything they apply themselves to. And so I just was fortunate, but I do think nurturing one's curiosity, and it'll lead to a lot of different things. Once you feel success in something, then I think you feel you're capable of trying other things. So finding that and encouraging that is really important.
You were in a generation of African-American architects, engineers, and science majors that were getting their first bite of the apple in universities such as Yale. And what was that like?
Well, I grew up in a very mixed-race community, so like I didn't feel like I ever had to change myself to fit in. So people that were my friends were my friends out of interest or whatever. So it stood me in stead to go into almost any environment. So I could be in an all-black environment, majority white environment, and I didn't feel like I had to remake myself. I just continued to follow my interests. But at Ohio State, there was no other black person in my architecture class. Maybe at Yale, there was about five of us at Yale when I was there. So I'm of the Clarence Thomas. I didn't know Clarence Thomas, but he was there when I was there. Hillary Clinton was there when I was there. Meryl Streep and different people I remember seeing in theater stuff and all that. But it was a nurturing community. And again, like the interest, I think it elevates you. And so there wasn't many of us, but I didn't dwell on that. And I never felt like any overt racism, not to say that it wasn't there in some form or fashion, but it didn't impede my grades or, you know, my position in the class, I don't think. Yale was more about money. I mean, people were doing houses for their parents while they were in college and all that. I didn't have those advantages, but and different. I mean, it's a gentleman's profession, architecture. You really need to be connected in some way to build a client base and all that, and I never had that. So I got more focused on preservation, and now I'm more engaged in public art aspects in New York and facilitating public art around African-American points of view, and that's been very rewarding, almost in a more administrative and engaging way between agency and creative players.
Well, if you're just joining us, the voice you heard is that of architect John T. Reddick. He's going to be the keynote speaker for the 2024 Preservation Bath Lecture and Awards presentation. That's going to be Sunday, April 21st, in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church. John, you focused your talk on the African-American significance and the importance of the pools in the African-American community, and obviously your family ties, something that you were able to draw a lot of reference and information form. But, you know, is there any other works out there, scholarly works or pieces out there that you were able to draw from?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, I knew architecturally that those buildings mimic historic structures. And so there's a architectural design that comes out really like Palladian architecture, and the women's pools like the Pantheon structures. So even though they're wood structures, they're actually mimicking really historic structures and architectural history. And then once I started to get that interest, the blessing of eBay is that I just started hunting for things. So I found pictures of the old Warm Springs Hotel. I started to realize that the pools were oriented toward the hotel, not the road. And like different things about how they're situated, how the little house building and all really have hallmarks and really historic universal architecture, not just American architecture, but Italian architecture and principles. So I found that really interesting.
Have you encountered any issues as you've transitioned into, you know, maybe not building structures, but preserving structures? What was that transition like for you?
Well, it's kind of hard. Like, I mean, the African-American communities, I live in Harlem, and we're really struggling to get more vast preservation, particularly in the current political climate, where, like, if it isn't there, it wasn't true. Like, we look at African-American history and all of that. So even if I look at Bath County, I used to go down Main Street, and Mrs. Donaldson had a restaurant, and there was a place called The Airship where the black workforce worked. And it was like a set out of like a play or a movie in terms of all the activity and the bustle. And now you look at that hillside, you can't even imagine that that activity happened. And so there's a sense of the physical that provokes the historical. And so I think it's just very important to have those touchstones. And so like in Harlem, the black soldiers, when they came back from the First World War, they marched up Fifth Avenue and turned on 110th Street along Central Park to come into Harlem. And Harlem looks like Paris. It's laid out like the boulevards of Paris. And I realized, like, someone like Marcus Garvey's pictures with those buildings in the background was hinting to people that there was a potential sense of empire. They were new buildings. They weren't slum buildings and all of that. And so as an architect, I can look at those things and really connect back to how they might have felt or what that spirit was like for black people to possess, you know, apartment buildings with elevators after coming from Mississippi or someplace like that. And all those things, if you think about them, you can kind of feel the spirit of the time, even if you weren't there. And so I just think architecture does a lot to tell you that. Even the pools, I mean, if you go in, it's not a regular swimming pool. It's not, you know, it's not painted aqua and with cement size. You know, it's very different, and it's, you know, and it's telling you something else about a time period. So imagine soldiers during the Civil War bathing there and all that. It's kind of magical.
Well, you know, you mentioned about maybe transitioning into the retirement phase of your career and maybe doing some other things, but, you know, for an interest or a curiosity, a life calling like architecture, I mean, what would retirement even look like for you?
I don't know. I'm working on a book. I do tours of Harlem. My interest in architecture, and people started asking me to do tours of Harlem that focus on the Jewish past of Harlem, which I didn't know much about. And I went to a talk in the Lower East Side of New York, which is a historically Jewish community. And the person talking talked about how Jews were being displaced from the Lower East Side because of the building of the Williamsburg Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge to cross over from Manhattan to another other boroughs. And when I left that talk, I could see how streets were wide and people had to move and all of that. And part of the people who had to move were people like the George Gershwin's family, the Marx Brothers, all these people. And they moved to Harlem, and there was the elevated train areas of Harlem where the poor people lived near the elevated. But there also were areas near the park and these grand boulevards. And so wealthy Jews and poor Jews were living neck and neck and socializing around their synagogues, Russian or German or whatever their core synagogues were. And blacks were coming up for the same reason, well-to-do churches and black families first, but then the more middle class come. And I could see in that very early period, the 1890s, ragtime music was becoming very popular. And it was like the hip-hop music of that time. And so Gershwin wants to learn that music. All these people want to learn this music, and they're learning it from black people. And you can see all the beginnings of the American songbook coming out of that engagement of two outsider groups. And so I'm working on a book that talks about that and shows their interaction and stuff. So the first wave of my retirement is to get that book done.
That sounds like a great research area, a great mashing of history, culture, music, and arts. And you're an educator. I'm looking forward to your talk. That was John T. Reddick. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the 2024 Preservation Bath Lecture and Award Ceremony. His talk is going to be The Pools and Their African-American Legacy. John, I could do this all day long, but I don't want to spoil the talk for folks. If you've enjoyed this kind of banter, you're going to get more of that on Sunday, April 21st. John, I really appreciate you for being on Allegheny Mountain Radio. Do you have anything you'd like to leave us with?
Well, I love Hot Springs and the people there. I look forward to reconnecting with a lot of you. I hope you come to the talk. I have fond memories of the church where we're going to have this program and all of that. So I look forward to my trip there and spending some time and getting back in the pools. I haven't been in the pools in like 8 years or more, so it'll be fun.
Well, John, thank you so very much for your time. I will see you shortly.